Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for joining me today for today's weekly update. I'm joined today by Secretary Jose Romero of the Department of Health and Secretary Johnny Key of the Department of Education. And before we go into discussing the latest numbers on COVID, I did want to make some comments on the special session that is ongoing. As you know, the focus of this session is passing the largest tax increase in Arkansas history, nearly $500 million of tax relief each year when it is fully implemented. All taxpayers will benefit from this tax reduction plan. Lower income individuals will see a greater percentage reduction in their taxes than any other category group. Over 100,000 low-income Arkansans will have their state income tax liability totally eliminated by this plan. And as you know, it reduces the rate, with the top rate being reduced to 5.5% next year, 5.3% in 2023. This will increase our competitiveness as a state in attracting industry and talent to Arkansas. And so all taxpayers benefit from this. Obviously, those taxpayers that pay more taxes will benefit because of the lower rate as well. And I want to applaud the General Assembly for this morning's work in keeping the focus on this historic plan. In regards to the effort that has been introduced or attempted to be introduced, to show Arkansas's appreciation for law enforcement. I fully support the increase in pay of our law enforcement officers. They are on the front line. We want to show our respect to them. We want to make sure they have an income that can provide for their family. Today, I spoke with both Sheriff Marty Boyd of the Sheriff's Association and Chief Gary Sipes of the Association of Chiefs of Police. They both agreed that a tax credit does not increase the salaries of law enforcement officials. And if you worry about our low pay, and some people say that our law enforcement pay is ranked 49th among all the states. Well, if you give a tax income tax credit, that does not change that ranking. It does not change their salary. And we should worry about their low pay, but the answer is let's increase the salaries. A tax credit is hard to apply just to law enforcement and not to include all of our first responders, firefighters that are on the front line and other frontline workers. And if you give them a tax credit, again, that does not change their base pay and their ranking, our state's rankings in that regard. The best policy is to lower the taxes for everyone and to work on increasing the salaries of law enforcement officials. It does start with the state because we have a responsibility for the Arkansas State Police and that law enforcement entity, and we want to assume that responsibility. We want to look at that more closely, and I expect that we're going to have an effort in the future to increase the pay of our state responsibility, which is our state troopers and other state law enforcement agencies. And so we will work to increase that, but county and municipal officers are paid for by local government. And the state would be remiss in our responsibilities to education and to other essential services of the state to assume a responsibility of local government. The state should not assume that responsibility for local law enforcement. It would be a bad precedent to do that. Notwithstanding that, I've directed Secretary Jamie Cook to work on a plan to increase Arkansas State Police salaries and then to see if there are some specific ways to encourage or incentivize local governments to raise the salaries of local responsibility because that is the responsibility that they have. And so with that, I was pleased that, again, the focus is on our tax cuts efforts. I hope that continues through the course of this special session. And I will say that the leadership has worked very closely with my administration It's a joint effort with the legislature to draft this plan, to present it, and I think they're doing a good job of managing and keeping the focus on that. Now let me go to our COVID case report for today. And we see that our COVID-19 cases are continuing to rise, even though they're down a little bit this week from last week. But compared to last week, in terms of our active cases, we have 1,700 more active cases this week than last week, and we have 48 more current hospitalizations. And you can see the case report there. We have an increase of 932. Again, I'm pleased that it's down from a week ago, but our active cases are up. And when you see for an extended period of time our active cases going up, you know that the deaths are a lagging indicator that they will increase over time, and terribly sad that we have 24 Arkansans that have died from this. If you look at our vaccination, which is great news, and that is that we've given out 17,000 doses over the last 24 hours. And so what you can see is that whenever the risk increases, our vaccination increases, which means that Arkansans actually know they need to get the vaccine. They just have a tendency to put it off because they see the risk diminishing. But as the risk increases, they line up to get both their first dose, second dose, and booster doses as well. And that is a point of emphasis that I want to make today, and Secretary Romero will make it as well, is that studies suggest that vaccinations become less effective over time, especially in people age 65 and older. And so booster doses are important for increasing immunity. And so as cases continue to increase, we're also seeing more breakthrough cases among vaccinated individuals ages 65 and older who have not received a COVID-19 booster dose. And so that's why we're encouraging this population, particularly 65 and older, to get a booster dose. I know it's a surprise to many people, but I'm actually in that age category. And so please know that I have gotten my booster dose. Now, I did want to show this by a couple of graphs right here. This is the percent of the population that has received booster doses or third doses and is by age category. Now, on the right, you see 65 and older, that 34% of those 65 and older have received the booster shot. Now, I know that's a taller bar graph than the other bar graphs, but that's still only 34%, which really shows that you have an elderly population that, as time goes on, will be increasingly vulnerable if they do not get that booster shot. If you go to the younger age groups, you can see sequentially how the booster shot rate is not as high. And so all of those categories, we really need to increase their booster shot. That's what we're encouraging today. And that's going to keep us much safer, because you've got to realize that over time, the effectiveness will reduce. So get your booster shot. And this is illustrated. Now, this is a little bit busy, but on the Pfizer and Moderna, that the booster shots are available 6 months after you received your primary series. And so right now we're in the month of December, and so if you had your primary series of shots in June or before, it's time for you to get your booster shot. Now in January it'll be those in July, and so pay attention when you should be getting your booster shot. And that obviously, the 65 and plus should all be eligible for it, presuming they got it at the beginning. But look at the time frame, see when you're eligible to get the booster shot, and concentrate on that. On the Johnson & Johnson, it's just 2 months lag time that's needed. And so there's the time frame. So we're in December now. And if October and before you had your primary series, you're eligible for that booster shot. And let's go on to just some more information. Hospital data were increased by 4, ventilators increased by 6. The primary counties, it's not a surprise, Benton, Pulaski, and Craighead Washington County's not in there. Craighead comes in and out. And then next, this is the 7-day rolling average of confirmed and probable cases, which is our long graph. And it's interesting, sometimes you hear, are we in our fifth wave, fourth wave, third wave? Sometimes you lose track a little bit, and nationally they use different characteristics of our history in the pandemic. But Dr. Romero and I were discussing this, and you know, it started out in March of 2020, and we had a gradual increase where we peaked in you know, the winter months of December and January, and then we dramatically went down steady through those summer months, and then we see us going back up again for our second peak, which is clear. So the question is whether we're going into a third surge or not. I'm encouraged by the fact that with the vaccination rate, I have some level of confidence we're going to be able to keep the hospitalizations down, and we're going to be much lower in terms of where we are going to be during this winter month. But we will see, and it's based upon everyone's behavior. Again, just a reminder that if you're looking at those that are dying, statistically, 85% of those that are have a COVID death have not been vaccinated. 87% of those in the hospital have not been vaccinated. 87% of those new cases have not been vaccinated. So statistically, logically, scientifically, the vaccination is the best protection. Our 7-day rolling average is at 8.8%. We hope that that can stay down below 10%. I believe that concludes the data that I wanted to present today and the emphasis on boosters. And I know that Secretary Romero is going to make some comments about that booster shot as well, followed by Secretary Keith.
Thank you, Governor. So again, to emphasize the issue of the booster for all individuals that are appropriate age to this, they should receive it. In particular, we're worried about the 65 and over, which have the greatest risk of adverse outcome. We know that the vaccines are effective. They wane over time. That's not something that we don't know about. We know that vaccines tend to take less hold in the older population, and we need to boost or re-immunize at intervals. You know, what we're learning about these vaccines is that this may not just be a two-dose vaccine, this may be a three-dose vaccine. We have vaccines that are three-dose vaccines, especially for adults, and this may change in the future. But now, all individuals that have received a vaccine are eligible for a third dose, a booster dose. We want the elderly to please receive that vaccine because they're the ones that are breaking through in higher numbers as their immunity wanes over time. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the 5 to 11-year-old group. At this time, we are moving forward, but we're about 5 to 6% below the national average for children receiving that vaccine. So again, parents, this is a very safe and effective vaccine. If we want to protect our children, we need to get this vaccine administered to all our children. We want to protect them as much as possible. Again, we're also seeing the Omicron variant. We know that those cases are breaking through in vaccines. So again, we want everybody to be fully immunized and get their boosters as appropriate in case we start to see cases here in the state. We have not identified a case as of yet. We are screening actively for this particular variant. So thank you very much, and I'll turn it over to Secretary Key.
I'm going to keep with the theme of vaccinations today. Earlier in the year, we talked about getting an updated version of the kids' guide that we distributed last year. Last year, we didn't have the information on the vaccines. This year, we do. So we've updated this information to include information about the Operation Warp Speed, how the vaccines were developed, how the vaccines work. And it's designed to be a tool for parents to read with their children and help make an informed decision. Obviously, this isn't the comprehensive information. We still recommend working with and consulting the medical professionals on that. But as Dr. Romero said, This is targeted to that 5 to 11 age group in those grades. And these booklets have been drop shipped to the districts. That began last week. So over the next few weeks, hopefully before the Christmas holiday, these will be distributed throughout the elementary schools in the state. We've also will be making them available to the health department and other state agencies that interact with students and families with kids within this age group. We also have obviously an English version and a Spanish version for our Spanish speaking families out there as well. And as I said, those brochures have been sent directly to the schools. So if you're interested in making sure you get a copy of this, consult and call your child's school and ask them if they haven't distributed it yet to make sure that that they are distributing those as soon as possible. And with that, I'll turn it back to the governor.
And we'll be happy to take any questions.
This special session focused on tax cuts, or what's the likelihood of it being extended to take up other issues?
You know, I've talked to numerous House members and Senate members, and they all want to, the ones I've talked to want to keep it narrowly focused on these, on the tax cut issue, which is the purpose of the special session. That's an issue up to the General Assembly, but We look at the balance of power, and I know that was debated today in the session. And under our Constitution, we have a legislature that meets in general session once every 2 years. The exception is that the governor, based upon a special call, can designate certain matters that can be considered in a special session. I have done that, and to go beyond that, it takes a two-thirds vote. And so this is what is set forth in our Constitution. It is a balance of power that we have that's worked well for over 100 years, and I hope that it works in this session. And I applaud the leadership and the members that from today's vote seem to be focused on keeping it on target. We want to recognize the significant and historic role of these tax cuts and keep the focus on that.
But what does the screening process look like for the Omicron variant?
Yes, Dr. Merrill.
So we currently have two processes for this. One is that we take random samples that are positive and send to the CDC or to a laboratory that has partnered with us to sequence them. The other is that we take our positive samples, and because we know that a certain type of test will be missing a band for that particular or one of the markers for it, we can use those positives, we can use that test to screen the positives and then focus on those positives as particularly important to be sequenced. So we have two methods to do this at this time, and we're actively screening at this point.
And at this point, we have not identified the Omicron variant here in Arkansas, even though it's in a couple surrounding states.
The issue with boosters in the 65 and older population, how big an issue are the breakthrough cases in terms of cases and hospitalizations compared to people who are not vaccinated at all?
I would have to look at the data. Do you want to address that? Because I think that's a specific data question.
We can provide you with the numbers, but it's clear that those individuals that are not vaccinated are making up the bulk of the hospitalizations. There are individuals that are getting older, that have their immunity is waning, and they're contributing to those hospitalizations, but they are far less than those that have not been vaccinated. We know that that group that have been vaccinated and are older, and they're getting further and further out from their vaccine initial series completion, are becoming more at risk. That is why we want everyone, and in particular the older group, those individuals that are in long-term care facilities who are being cared for, have the legal authority to authorize those vaccines with other persons, to understand that it's important to get that vaccine. But they are not the major group going into the hospital now. It is the non-vaccinated individual.
Is there anything being done or any extra precautions for places like nursing homes
going into this year?
And the answer is yes. The Nursing Home Association, the Healthcare Association, as well as the industry understands what's at stake. We have made sure that if they request an extra clinic or extra doses, that that's available to them. We've encouraged the clinics to be held and make sure that they can focus on the booster shots and that availability. So there is an emphasis there, and that will continue. Is there?
Can you tell us more about the plan to increase law enforcement salaries? And does this go against what was recommended by the law enforcement tax force? Did they recommend a tax credit?
The law enforcement task force did have a recommendation. They had a number of recommendations. One, you need to increase salaries. And this was also recommended in terms of the tax credit. Now, probably, there's been probably over six or seven of the recommendations that have already been adopted. That recommendation, I understand where it's coming from, but as I look at it, I believe the best policy is raising the salaries versus that tax credit. And I think there's many, in fact, that bill was offered in the last general session and was not adopted. And so I think the better policy is raising salaries. We did take some steps, both internally, but also lowering the retirement age for the state police. So that's part of the recommendations coming out of the task force that we've adopted. But it's an ongoing effort there. I mean, it's when you're talking about significantly raising law enforcement salaries, that is not something that's done overnight. And that's something that also takes the efforts of our local governments. And so it was a finding, it was a recommendation that hopefully will be persuasive to them. You ask about, our specific plans. Our responsibility is the state law enforcement community. And if you raise their salaries, make it more competitive, that sets a good example. And it also will help, encourage local municipalities to do the same. That's their responsibility. And, there might be some other ways that Secretary Cook will look at learning from other states that can be useful for the states to incentivize, but that's going to take a little bit longer time to study that. Is there anyone on the remotely to ask a question?
Hey, Governor, this is Michael Wilson with 5 News of North Coast Arkansas. We saw recently that UAMS put out a study saying that Arkansas could be getting ready for a third wave, or they're warning of a third wave. I guess, what are your thoughts on this study and measures that we can continue to take?
Whose study was that?
It's like UAMS.
Okay, UAMS. Yes, we regularly review those studies, and certainly, I think Dr. Romero has said, it looks like we're getting ready for a third wave. But the question is, how high a wave is it? How is the wave going to impact hospitalizations? And those are the unknown criteria. And you see that in, current wave that's increasing across the United States of America. And actually, I think Arkansas is pushing back on it. We're holding our own as best we can, with emphasis upon the vaccinations. So we'll see where it goes. But, at this point, it looks like it's starting that third wave. We will see. Hopefully, it'll be much flatter than the previous waves. Did you have additional comments? That's good. Any other questions? Okay. With that, thank you all for being here today. Have a good afternoon.